going to you not so live from Indiana and Virginia, Body Bag Podcast.
Is that your stage voice?
Yeah. Well, thanks for interrupting the introduction.
Sorry, I thought you were done.
No.
Sorry.
Well, this is Body Bag Podcast.
No, we can do it again.
My co-host Chris Thomas.
No, I'm a horrible
I try co-host. Something, you just derail me. Cool.
I thought you were done. I could have led you in and like, and here's your host with that cheesy announcer voice. Welcome to Body Bag Podcast, everyone. Excuse my shitty, like, can't read the room, can't play along with it attitude.
And today we're going to be reviewing Late Night with the Devil.
Late Night with the Devil was probably my most looked forward to movie for 2024 so far.
It was until the couple of trailers that dropped this past week.
How about we tag that at the end?
Yeah.
Actually, we might forget. What were some of the trailers that came out? That
Trap by M. Night Shyamalan, and then The Watchers from his daughter Ashana Night Shyamalan.
I didn't see that one, but.
Yeah,
I did see the trailer for M. Night's new project, and as I was looking at it, I was like, okay, this seems interesting.
If he's part of it, you gotta watch it because it's M. Night Shyamalan.
He's built up some goodwill with me since Knock at the Cabin, and this definitely seems like a interesting premise. It certainly seems as though the father himself is the person there to stop.
Yeah.
So that seems like a pretty cool premise, but you know what? And what was the other one?
The Watchers.
I don't know if I saw the trailer for that yet.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that at some other point, but we still have a full show today because we're going to have a spoiler-ish and a spoil-free-ish type talk about Late Night with the Devil.
Yeah.
But we did have homework. Just because it's a newer movie doesn't mean we didn't have homework.
And I was given Hell's Carnival.
Yeah, it was you gave me No One Can Save You, and I gave you Devil's Carnival, just because it was just one of the other, it was just one of two musicals that I just kind of wanted to throw in the mix, the other one being Genetic Opera, which you reviewed.
Yeah.
This one was by the same guy, so I just thought it'd be interesting to...
Yeah.
And don't worry, there's probably no more musicals going forward from now. I just wanted to get those two out. I just wanted to get those two out of there. I don't know how you are with musicals.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
All right, so go ahead.
All right. Basically, this Hell's Carnival follows around three characters. John, a grieving father.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Merriwood, who's a thief.
Yep.
And then Tamara, who ends up in hell by... her getting killed by her angry boyfriend. And they go to hell, which is basically, it's a carnival.
Which I like that kind of premise.
Yeah.
I would love to go to like a hell-themed or a demon-themed carnival.
Yeah. And Hell's Carnival. So it basically follows these three characters around as they all kind of wake up in hell. They each receive a ticket into the carnival.
Mm-hmm.
And John, the grieving father, the entire time, he's just looking for his son, Daniel.
Yeah, he lost his son. He's looking for his son.
He meets up with Mrs. Merriwood, who she died because she was a thief killed in a police shootout.
Yeah.
So as she's going through the carnival, with him, she's just taking stuff. Anything shiny, basically.
You could definitely tell. It's a carnival, but it's definitely a carnival on a budget.
Yeah.
I'll just say that straight up right now. I don't think this had the budget of Repo the Genetic Opera.
It had a budget of $500,000.
Okay, well, you keep talking. I'm just going to look up Genetic Opera, see how much that was comparatively. But keep going.
All right, so basically, then you get the devil, and he's reading from a book of fables.
Aesop's Fables,
yeah. And each of the three stories... are basically concurring with a fable.
$8.5 million, by the way, was Repo the Genetic Opera. So this one was pretty much 7.5 million, actually 8.5 million, so this was pretty much $8 million less.
Yeah. So Mrs. Merriweather, her fable is the dog and her reflection.
Yes.
Basically, she's so focused on getting her hands on anything valuable, you lose sight in yourself. And she starts playing this carnival game for the biggest diamond. She doesn't even realize the carny turns into herself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as she plays a game of basically tossing a coin into a bucket, misses all of them. She's then stripped of her clothes and then whipped in front of the entire carnival.
As a musical number plays.
Yeah.
Which, do you know who that was? Just out of curiosity. The one who did the singing number, which was a hobo clown.
The hobo clown? No.
I don't know if you're a fan, but he's the lead singer, excuse me, of Five Finger Death Punch.
Okay. So she's with musical number plays. And then the next fable is a toad and a scorpion, which follows Tamara, and she's basically in hell.
That one's a pretty famous fable.
Yeah, because she trusted her boyfriend who ended up killing her. So while she's in there, she meets a guy aptly named Scorpion, mm-hmm. locked in a cage.
Subtle.
Yeah. She frees him, and they begin to flirt like throughout the movie.
Yeah, and if you don't know the story of a toad and the scorpion, basically,
yeah.
Scorpion wants to ride on the toad across the river. Toad doesn't trust him because he says, "You'll sting me." But he says, "Nah, if you sting me, I'll drown too because we'll sink."
Yeah.
So they go across the stream. Yeah. Stings him anyway, and he's like, "Why are you going to do that? We're both going to drown." And he said, "Well, it's my nature."
Yeah.
And that's basically the quick gist of Scorpion and the Frog.
And back to Tamara. So she's basically being flirted with by the scorpion. She sees him kissing another person. She runs out. And he basically gets angry with her like most men in her life, and he talks her into trusting him. So she gets on his wheel table.
Yep.
Which he throws knives at. That's his like carny thing.
The knife throwing act.
The first like three or four miss her, like, you know, he's, and then the fifth one hits her dead in the heart.
Yep, dead.
And she's dead.
Which is weird because they're kind of all, they're already dead, but they're now even more dead.
Yeah.
I think the implication is that they basically have to go through this thing ever for eternity.
Yeah. And then the final fable is the devil and his due. And this is about John and his grief, because John died because he killed himself. Because he was grief. He lost his son. He walks in and Satan's reading the fable to his son. Then,
and this is the, I think this is the first, is it the first and only song that the devil is actually singing?
Yeah. And then his son turns into a little fool, carny thing. And John basically breaks down and says, "I don't want to grieve anymore." And the devil's like, "If that's the case, I'll send you to heaven."
I'll send you to heaven.
And he sends John to heaven, and his second in command's like, "Why would you do that? That's against the rules."
Yeah, what would you do that for? We like suffering here.
Yeah, and that's what the devil says. "We're changing the rules. We're going to put heaven out of business." Rally all the people. Basically sings the number along with the credits. Boom.
And, I have not seen it, but that does lead into a sequel called Alleluia, The Devil's Carnival.
Yeah.
Which I have not seen, but don't worry, I won't make you watch it. But
I actually did watch it afterwards.
Oh, all right. Well, tell me what you thought of the movie then.
About a quarter way through, I stopped paying attention because I was actually focusing on schoolwork. So. Oh. But yeah, so.
No, I meant for the first one, Devil's Carnival 1.
The first one, yeah.
That's what I was saying. What's your breakdown?
Oh, I thought you were asking about the second one. No, the first one I enjoyed. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I thought this was a fun movie.
That's good.
Yeah. I'm more up for a musical and go rewatch the second one.
I have better luck with my homeworks for you than I do with my verses.
Yeah. So, to break this one down, technicals, I did like the cinematography in this one.
It was pretty good considering it was a smaller budget. Yeah.
Yeah. Considering now that I know the budget, I was originally going to go 7, but with it only being a $500,000 budget, I think we have it at 7.5.
If you compare it to like Repo, the Genetic Opera.
Yeah. So we go 7.5, and then story. I felt like it was a really well-told way of mixing in like these older fables into this modern telling.
Yeah, I didn't think I it's something I never heard before of mixing hell and Aesop's fables.
Yeah. So I'm also gonna give the story a 7.5.
Hey.
And then enjoyment looks like it was pretty enjoyable. I could see myself rewatching this. Especially it is a short watch. It's like 56 minutes.
Yeah, it's not a long sit through.
Not a long commitment at all, so enjoyment would probably give it a 7.
You probably appreciated that I gave you a shorter one.
I was like, oh, that's nice, yeah.
Some movies are just good as like an hour-ish kind of thing where it's like you can
Yeah.
tell a whole story in about an hour.
Yeah, so overall it's 22 out of 30.
Hey, I'm actually pretty happy that you
Yeah.
liked it. Plus, there's not really a whole lot of people I know who know Devil's Carnival really.
Yeah.
So, oh, but how did you like if you were to compare it to Repo: The Genetic Opera? Which one would you say probably edges out in terms of enjoyment?
I think this one I liked a little bit better.
A little bit better.
Yeah.
Yeah, they both have their moments.
Yeah.
I think the music is definitely better consistently in this in the thir in the Devil's Carnival.
Yeah. I think it's better here than in the Genetic Opera. So, Chris, I gave you No One Will Save You.
Did you see this before, or did you keep going with your I don't want to know what I'm giving out this season?
Oh no, I watched this movie. I very much enjoyed it. When it comes to me giving you homework assignments, these are all movies that I personally enjoyed, so.
Okay, so No One Will Save You. I went into this blind. Usually with your recommendations, I don't look at any trailers. I don't look
Yeah.
at any ads. I don't look at anything. So No One Will Save You. I had no idea what to expect.
Yeah.
I just trusted your gut instinct to guide
Yeah.
me. So it starts out with this woman going about her day. You can tell that she's either nervous or that this town feels a little off. She doesn't feel comfortable like out in public for some
Yeah.
reason. She keeps to herself. She seems very sweet though. She like wears her flowery dress. She's a seamstress.
She's played by Caitlin
Dever.
Devers. If you ever watch Last Man Standing, she was the youngest daughter.
And Dave keeps giving me movies where I fall in love with the lead actress. Cause I she was she was very sweet, but in a different way than Aaron from You're Next.
Yeah.
She was very sweet, flowery dress. She had a very school teacher. She had that kind of vibe that the school teacher from Matilda that likes. She was very sweet.
Very much. She's one of those girls. Takes place in, this current timeline, 2020s. But she's that type of girl that wishes she was back in like the 1950s.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, she would be home probably in the 50s.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel the same way. Anywho, once in a while we see her like writing letters. She seems to be keeping up a correspondence with somebody. At one point, she goes out to a graveyard, so you could tell that she's lost somebody, and she's just very awkward. Like every time,
Yeah.
she's not awkward. People around her treat her awkwardly. She goes back to her home, goes to bed. Power goes out that night, and her name is Bryn, by the way,
Yeah.
Brynn, Bryn. She hears a noise outside. She wakes up in the middle of the night. She starts walking downstairs, and what the fuck is that thing? She just sees this thing, like in the shadows, kind of moving around. Which I thought they were playing with shadows and keeping the thing hidden very well. I liked that. I said, "Damn, movie, this is getting tense. Playing with shadows, a lot of silent ambient noise. We might just get along." And then I wrote in capital letters with a question mark, "Aliens?" I was like, "Oh, Dave gave me an alien movie. Okay." First, I thought it was gonna be like a like it was gonna be another in the middle of nowhere slasher, and no one can save you. So this alien is in her house, just rifling through her stuff like an asshole, just rifling through her things. And it's the way it looks is kind of like your typical gray alien, but they have different aliens have different sized limbs. Like you have some that are like very short, squat aliens, and you have other aliens later that you'll see with, like, these gigantic long arms.
Yeah.
But they all seem to have, like, the classic gray aliens with big eyes kind of look. So, she thinks she's it's a good 10 minutes she's hiding from this alien. It's pretty tense.
Yeah.
And then it attacks her, and it has telekinesis, so the whole house is going nuts.
Yeah.
And then as she's, like, squirming and trying to get away, she grabs something, and then it stabs him in the head. Stabs him in the head, it goes down. And you know what? That's what he gets for being an asshole.
Right.
Coming in,
just come grabbing people.
Grabbing people, breaking shit, knocking her out. She got hit by a door.
Yeah. Fucks her house all up.
At 20 minutes, you start to notice, or I started to notice, that our hero, Rin, hasn't said a word. And while I love that as an artistic choice, because she pretty much is silent throughout the entire movie, which I thought nobody talks, pretty much.
Yeah.
Which I thought was pretty interesting. I liked that, actually, as a artistic choice. But
yeah.
In reality, at this point, there would have been a lot of cussing. And, like, in reality, like, a lot of screaming and cussing.
Yeah.
Anyway, she stabs this creature in the head. It's laying there, and she's just kind of stunned until morning. Like, kind of like how anybody would be once they found out, A, aliens exist, and B, I just killed one. The next morning, she gets up, cleans herself up. And she notices something wrong with the town. A lot of the lawns have these big circles in the middle of the yard. There's a mail truck that was flipped over. Somebody's house was all messed up. And she goes into town. She's going to go to the police. And she goes and opens up the door. She goes to the police. And there's this woman there who she looks mortified to see. And this woman just spits in her face. And I'm like, and then I sent a message. I said, okay. What did this woman do to this town? They're acting like she's the town pedophile. Why is everybody acting like she has the plague?
And the woman, I believe, she is the wife of the chief of police.
She's the wife of the chief of police, and she spits in her face, and the police officers and everybody just looks and then just goes back to their business. So you're like, what in the hell is going on here? All right, so she's like, all right, well, I'm getting out of Dodge.
Yeah.
So she gets on a bus. And discovers that we got a body snatch situation going on.
Oh, yeah.
More and more people, she's starting to realize, are pretty much infected with whatever the aliens are infecting them with. She manages to get out of the bus, and she starts running. She eventually ends up at the graveyard again, where we see... She goes to the gravesite of basically the person who she'd been writing letters to. Apparently it was a friend of hers as a kid. Died as a kid.
Yeah.
But she writes letters to her, you know, just as a little keepsake thing to write. And a storm is coming on the horizon.
Oh, yeah.
At this point, I just... it's a little bit later on, but she sees... The way that these people are infected is that they have some sort of, like, alien bug in their throat. So it's time to home alone this house. Time to go home and home alone the house. Another alien scout party comes to come try to find her. And they collect the dead body of the alien that was from last night. And another 10 minutes of them basically different aliens. they don't all come at her at once for some reason. They just go one at a time to try to, like, get her.
Yeah.
And they keep making these aliens look like they're, like, misunderstood or like they're trying to understand us. But then they do asshole things.
Yeah. But these aliens are trying to, like, get in her head. And I think this one, you start getting the flashbacks of her childhood. And you see why everything is the way it was.
That goes a little bit later, though.
Yeah.
Because at one point, they try to take her into the woods. She gets dragged out into the woods. And it looks like she's about to be abducted. But she managed to get free. And she actually manages to blow up another alien. So at this point, she's killed two aliens. How are these aliens losing so badly? Yet are still taking over the town. One person killed two aliens. Where's the government?
Yeah.
Where's the police? Where's the army?
Yeah, there's no one else putting up a fight against these guys because they don't look like they'd be that hard to beat. Like,
and as much as I said I was loving this main actress, she was no Aaron from Your Next. She's not, like, capable like your Aaron, where when we get her backstory, we're like, oh, she's capable. She can handle herself. She was on a compound.
This is a girl who kind of hates herself and
yes.
basically exiled herself from town.
Pretty much a hermit.
Yeah.
And like, she's, like, the only one able to take these aliens out. All right, whatever. All right, so she's getting chased. She's been getting tossed around like a rag doll over the place. One yeets her through a wall. Because they have telekinesis. How are they losing like this? They have telekinesis. They can hold her in place.
Right.
So they snatch her. So they ended up snatching her the hard way. They had to bring a whole ship out there to snatch her. And then they shove this tentacle thing down her throat. And not like that, Dave. So she gets this alien, basically kind of like a tentacle seed put in her throat. Oh, turns out it was all just a dream. She wakes up, she's kind of like back in her bed. And I'm like, well, we still got 24 minutes. What could we possibly do for the next 24 minutes?
Right.
No, psych. She was actually under an influence of whatever the seed does makes you hallucinate. Like, it makes you hallucinate an idealer scenario, I guess. She gets cloned, basically. I guess it stayed in her throat long enough where she's able to rip it out of her throat. She kind of like breaks the will that it has over her and then takes it out. And then it pretty much, I guess, has her DNA, so it clones her.
Yeah.
Chases her down, but it stabs her. And then she stabs the clone. Clone dies. 18 minutes left, and I have no idea how this is going to resolve. She gets caught again. then we finally get the big flashback, the one that you were telling us. They grab her in the ship and said, all right, enough of this. Just grab her and take her out, like, away from the planet so we can observe her.
Yeah.
And they basically get her childhood trauma flashback. The friend that she had been writing letters to was her childhood friend that she had had an argument with her as a kid, and she got pushed down, and then she grabbed a rock and hit her in the head and accidentally killed her. And that is, I guess, enough to make an entire town turn against you? Like, an accident that happened when you were 12 years old? Like, I can understand the mother hating you for life. That's understandable. Yeah. But really, the entire town is gonna, like, shun you for something you accidentally did at 12?
Yeah.
And so, as we're getting the flashback, the aliens are pretty much just watching her. Or just kind of having a conversation with themselves, like, all right, so what do we do? They send her back to Earth, unpossessed.
Uninfected or replaced.
And I guess alien abduction is the best thing that can happen to a person because she wakes up the next morning and lives her best life.
Yeah, I guess I figured she's punished herself so much. It's just going to let her have her happy ending.
Yeah, so I guess she gets a free pass, but the rest of the world is fucked.
Yeah.
You know, all the humanitarian work that other people do and everything like that, people who actually deserve to get... No, but this chick, she got over the fact that she killed her friend. So we'll give her a pass, let her kind of live an ideal life in this town that is still infested with aliens. It's just all the people are like Stepford people. They just...
Okay, all super nice.
They're all good, the people from Get Out.
Yeah.
And that is how the movie ends. Pretty much she... Yeah. Is the only human, I guess, maybe, left on Earth?
Yeah. Maybe it's just that town. Who knows?
And still, the government's nowhere to be found. Right. Army's nowhere. It's just this is just how it is now.
Yeah.
And that's, no one can save you.
Yeah.
All right. I'm conflicted. Should I just go with a breakdown?
Yeah.
The technical, and I'm getting a lot more precise with my numbers now. Technicals, I gave a 7.1.
Okay.
I had a good amount of fun shots to it. They did a lot of different kinds of shots. There was some of the CG on the aliens was a little distracting at some points, but nothing too god awful. Yeah, I thought it was shot competently. It was a good 7.1.
Okay.
Story. Some of that nitpicky stuff kind of built up for me. Like where is the government? Where is the army?
Yeah.
How is it that this one woman, this lone hermit, is able to like break free of like that thing and do all this business, but everybody else is just kind of. And I gotta say, the ending might entertain a lot of people, but I didn't quite care for the ending.
Okay.
And I didn't really care for her backstory with her friend. I don't think that was enough to make a whole town shun you.
Right.
If it was an accident where she accidentally killed all of the town's children because she accidentally poisoned them or something, I could understand that, but it was like it was a squabble between two 12-year-olds and it got out of hand. And enjoyment, I gave a 5.8.
Okay.
5.8 is...
What's the score for story?
Story was 6.4.
All right. So that's a 19.3 out of 30.
As I was sitting watching it, I don't hate it. I don't think it's a bad movie either. I mean, I'd watch it if it's on. It is like that. Yeah. 1920 kind of ain't bad.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just sometimes a movie doesn't hit you as much as you would like it to hit you.
Right, yeah. That's
although cool. I will say I did. She kind of made me think. She kind of was like a mixture of Jenna Coleman and Emily Browning, if you know who those two are. Because it was acted mm. well. A lot of the yeah. stylistic choices I kind of liked.
Yeah.
Nobody said anything, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'll settle with a 19 point whatever out of 30.
Now it is time to assign each other some more homework.
Why don't you go first? What am I doing?
All right.
You got some. You got trouble now that I'm all done with Hell House. Now you
yeah. All right. So I know you're a big Cronenberg fan. So I'm gonna give you a movie that was directed by his son.
Okay.
Starring Mia Goth and one of the Skarsgård. It's Infinity Pool.
Yeah, that was on my list.
Yeah, I really enjoy this movie, and you're more into body horror than I am, so I really think this will be right in your wheelhouse of movies.
Okay, excellent. I'll take yeah. that.
Like, I think this was probably for me my third favorite movie of 2023. So I hope you enjoy it.
All right, here. I still haven't given you a winner of a slasher either, I don't think. Alright, it's been a while since I've seen one, and I wouldn't mind checking it out again. I'm going to give you a movie called Ravenous.
The Ravenous?
Ravenous. Ravenous from 1999.
Okay.
All that'll right. be in it. That's another one. That's kind of like, I don't know too many people who know about it, so it'll be nice to have somebody else who knows it. Kind of like Devil's Carnival. Those are the kinds I'm trying to give to you.
Alright.
Has a couple of good actors that I'm sure you'll recognize.
Alright, hopefully it's good.
And do you know what you're giving me?
Yeah, Infinity Pool.
Oh, I'm sitting here waiting for you to give it to me, and I'm like, Dave, are you going to give me mine? Yeah, you gave me mine. You made yeah. a whole spiel about it being Cronenberg.
Yeah.
I'm like, Dave, we have a show to do.
yeah.
Okay, cool. Infinity Pool and
Ravenous.
So that'll be fun. So, but we've done all this talking. It feels like we've been talking for a while. Yeah. Then again, all that technical difficulties we had.
Yeah. Just like the movie.
Yeah, we're just like this movie.
The main event of the evening. Time to start. We're going to do a quick little spoiler-free review of Late Night with the Devil.
And we're doing this at like close, well over my end, close to 10 o'clock right now. So we're doing Late Night with Body Bag.
Yeah, almost 9 o'clock here, so yeah.
Basically, if you just want a quick spoiler-free synopsis.
So you got a late-night host who's always been close to being the main guy, but hasn't quite reached that peak, and now his career's starting to falter. He's slipping in the ratings.
This is during the time of, like, Carson in the 70s, yeah. Where ratings were...
Where late-night TV was the big thing, and now... In a move of desperation on a Halloween episode, brings on a girl who's possessed. And then things happen.
Yeah, and talk show host pretty much tries to boost his ratings by tampering with forces he doesn't understand.
Yeah.
I had mentioned it before, but this was one of the few movies. I'd say this one and maybe Stop Motion are the two big movies I'm looking forward to. Yeah. That is what it's called, right? Stop Motion.
Yeah, I think that's already out.
Is it already out?
Stop Motion, yeah.
If it is, I might have to check it out. I just remember seeing whispers of it. I don't even remember what the full trailer looks like, but I like Stop Motion.
Yeah, there's a lot of good horror coming out this year.
I was really looking forward to this one, because I just remember coming across the trailer. I was just perusing TikTok, and I just saw enough of a clip of it. Of a teaser trailer to just be yeah. super interested, and I love that it takes it, that it's a 70s talk show.
But Stop Motion right now you can get on Amazon Prime for $6.99.
Ooh, I'll have to check that out.
But so. Yeah, I remember you were the one who showed me the preview for this, and then I got really excited for it because it's different.
And I'm really happy to see. I really hope I'm saying his name right. The main actor whose name is David Desmalchian. That's his name.
Yeah.
And I've only seen him in, like, little bit roles, like, in big movies, but he's always a side character.
Right, yeah. I haven't really seen him star in anything, but I have to say, in this movie, he was phenomenal.
I was glad that they showcased him and that he got a chance to like show his acting range, because I thought he was great.
He was great in this movie.
Which I had no doubt, because in the small scenes that I have seen him in, I can tell that the dude can act and he can be funny.
Yeah.
And I was just very psyched when I'm aboard the David fan bandwagon that's going on now. I hope that he is in a lot more stuff.
Yeah, because he was really good. Well, everyone in this movie was actually really good.
So the way that the course of the night goes, and I'm, again, this is still the spoiler-free bit, is that you're basically watching, like, the last airing of this famous talk show that was big in the 70s called Night Owls.
Yeah.
And his plan is that he's going to bring on a number of paranormal guests, and he wants to have this big Halloween special where he can do all these paranormal things in front of the camera so he can, like Dave said, get big ratings. His big thing is he wants to beat Carson.
Yeah, and also, like, usually when we get commercials in the late night show, they show the behind-the-scenes footage.
Which I absolutely love, because the movie is an hour and a half long, and it's like the length of a full show. Like, you see the show, a late night show, but then you also see, like, collected behind-the-scenes footage. You see the band doing their thing. You see the guest show host, like, entertaining the crowd in between takes. And
yeah.
I thought that was awesome. And then, as you can expect, the night gets a little stranger and stranger as things go on, till it reaches its head in front of the live studio audience, and there is a reason why it was the last recording of that show ever. And I think that's about all we can really go into in terms of details without being spoilery.
Yeah, so...
But
if you guys haven't watched it yet, check it out on Shudder. And if you don't want it spoiled, turn off the episode now, go watch it, and come back.
Yeah, so just basic bare bones that you need to know is that it's basically a mockumentary-type movie with a 70s aesthetic.
Do you want to give scores now before we go into the spoiler review?
You want to do the score? Oh, just so if people like stop now, they can be like, all right, well, this is what the score was?
Yeah.
I will give my score, and then I'll go into my explanation for it after the spoiler talk.
Yeah.
So I'll give you what my overall score is what it is now. For technicals, I gave it an 8.1. Love the aesthetic. Story, I gave an 8.25.
All right.
And again, I will go into details for all of this at some point, but the enjoyment, I gave an 8.55.
All right. And overall, 24.9 out of 30.
Which is high marks for me.
Yeah. And for me, for technicals, I gave it an 8.5. Yeah, just a very good vibe.
Just a hair above mine,
Yeah. Story, I went an 8. And then enjoyment, I went an 8.75.
So we pretty much have the same kind of score.
Yeah, 25.25 out of 30 for me, so.
Yours was just a little higher.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you wanted to know our overall scores, those are our scores. But now if you want to know why, we're going to go into some spoiler talk starting now.
Yeah. Spoilers start now.
All right, so do you want me to go ahead and tell you? I just kind of want to go ahead and explain my ratings.
Okay.
Because I desperately want to give this movie a 9. I really, really want to give this movie a 9. I give very few 9s out.
Yeah.
The Thing gets a 9. I think the only movie to maybe get a 9 on this show is The Menu.
The Menu, and I think maybe Last Night in Soho might be the two highest rated movies we've done.
And I think that the reason why it is not a 9 is because of the last 10 minutes.
Okay.
Actually, this is a score... We were actually closer to the audience score on this one than the tomato meter. The tomato meter gave it about a 94, 95.
Yeah, I thought it was really high up there.
But the general audience consensus is kind of like us, where it's saying,
it's
more like in the 80s. Like, it's really good, but it's not a master. But it was a good showcase for David the Smalchian.
He's like one of the main reasons I want to give it like a 9.5. Like, he was so good in this movie.
Yes, his performance, I think, is a 9.
Yeah.
So let's just go through it beat by beat, starting off with, did you like the 70s aesthetic, the way it is a 70s TV show?
I did enjoy that. I was a little worried if I was going to like that or not, but...
As somebody who...
It really just kind of hit with me. I was feeling the vibe.
As somebody who's done I've done a lot of like background, like camera work. And when I went to, I did technical school for broadcasting. So that behind the scenes stuff was very familiar and was very cool to see.
Yeah.
So much of this movie is perfect in terms of like the aesthetic and the fact that of what it is. I love the whole setting for this thing.
Yeah.
The people. How about the acting? So we had David, as I said, he plays the late night talk show host. What was his name? I forgot off the top of my head.
Jack Delroy.
Jack Delroy, the host of Night Owls. And what we know about Jack is that his wife has recently passed.
You have Gus McConnell, who's kind of like his sidekick on the show. Basically, that just kind of like a comic relief here and there.
To riff back and forth with each other.
Yeah. And that's played by Rice Auchware. He doesn't have a Wikipedia page, so he looked kind of familiar, but
I don't remember. I don't know if I've seen him in anything, but yeah, he was good.
Yeah. And then we're just going to go by like the order he brings them out. Because then he brings on a psychic.
Called Christu.
Yeah, Christu, who's played by Faisal Bazzi.
And why don't we just introduce them as they come on? And we'll say what happens during their skit. So he brings this psychic on. And he's like, all right, we want you to do a reading.
Does the basic psychic things. Like, does this mean anything? One of those cold readings, yeah. He finds a mom and daughter who recently lost son and brother due to suicide or whatever.
Right.
And basically makes them feel good. And then he's like, you can see him starting to get a little bit worse.
Yeah, he starts to get like a headache, like something's bothering him.
Yeah.
And he starts getting like, his head is starting to like hurt, and he's starting to say, there's like a presence here. There's a presence here. It starts with a M. It's a Billy, a mini.
Mini. Somebody accept this reading. He's on the ground, like on all fours.
Like an excruciating, like, pain. Like asking aneurysm someone, pain.
Yeah, for someone to.
I guess you have to accept the spirit as trying to talk to you. So.
Yeah, and no one does. And after about a minute or two, he's like, the spirit is gone.
And then they have to go to commercial break.
And then they go to commercial break, and basically, Christu, throughout the course of the break, is just basically trying to recover, basically.
Yeah.
Regain his composure.
Yeah, and is it Tony? You said Tony Delroy?
Jack Delroy.
And Jack, for one, he's loving this because he's like, oh, the ratings are going to be great. That was a great performance. And he thinks this is like all part of Christo's stick.
Yeah.
He's like, he's acting up for the crowd.
Yeah. He doesn't believe any of this is real. He thinks, you know, the next person they bring on, Carmichael Haig, a former magician turned skeptic played by Ian Bliss. This guy's a dick.
Well, I was going to say,
but that's who his character is supposed to be, and he played it very well.
He is put there for the audience to hate, especially if you're a horror or a paranormal enthusiast.
Yeah.
He's put here for you to hate him because he's just very nose in the air. This stuff
very
is nonsense.
Condescending about any of it. Yeah.
But the guy who plays him, the way he plays it, there's a way that you can play an asshole. Sometimes you can play it to the point where you're just like unbearable, but he plays it to the point where it's like, I liked his performance.
Yeah.
Because it's definitely what you would do on a late night talk show is that you bring people on and then they argue like that. So he was a jerk, but entertaining to watch.
Yeah. And basically he's offering $100,000 to whoever could prove without a shadow of a doubt that the paranormal exists.
Yeah, and just being pompous about it, because he's of the mind of, like, there's no way anybody will ever be able to prove the existence of blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, he starts picking apart Christu's performance and everything he did.
Yeah, and
right
some of the
stuff
is legit.
Right in front of Christu, some of it you can tell, like, yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
But he's also, it's not the fact that he's a skeptic that's why he's a douchebag. It's the fact that he's a skeptic that, you know, I imagine a lot of people probably are skeptics. I'm a skeptic a little bit, but I don't want to ruin other people's fun.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more of a believer. You don't see Chris here telling me that I'm full of shit because I believe in it.
No, and a lot of times that's what the fun of this mysterious stuff. I'm a skeptic to the point where I just say I don't know. But he does it very entertainingly.
Yeah.
The actor. What was the actor's name again?
Ian Bliss.
Ian Bliss.
Yeah.
I hope I see him. I don't know if I've seen him in any other things, but I hope to see him again. He played a pretty good part, and his facial hair game was on point.
Right. Like he's just an older, rounded fella who's just like, God, you're a dick, but great TV.
You can stick around.
Yeah.
you're great good TV. For ratings.
Yeah, great TV.
And you can tell that's the reason why. Because throughout the episode, he's constantly being condescending, but you can tell that Jack is like, yeah, but he makes for good ratings.
Yeah, and then also, like, the opening of the movie, they kind of refer to Jack's relationship with the Grove, which is kind of a dig at the Bohemian Grove conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got this Carmichael Egg who's like, hey.
Wait, what's the Bohemian Grove conspiracy? I just mm-hmmed you, and I'm like,
kind of like, that's
the first I've ever heard of it.
A place where all like the top celebrities, entrepreneurs, like Bill Gates.
Was it like Barack the Illuminati Obama, kind of thing?
Yeah, they all go out there and
secret
worship
society.
Worship an owl god. So it's very much on the nose if you know what that conspiracy is.
So it is very much like your Illuminati, or you show up in there at like the Eyes Wide Shut party where they're all just in masks. Like,
and in this movie, they showed like the Grove praying to like an owl deity too. And you got Haig asking, and can you give me an invite to the orgies?
And that's what he's trying to get out of it, because he admits that he's a showman.
Yeah.
But he's doing it to disprove people, and he's just trying to get in good with Jack so he cares about ratings too.
Yeah.
So he gets brought on, and he's, like Dave said, was just basically shit-talking Christu and his performance. Yeah. And Christu's not looking good.
Yeah. And then Christu, he gets very offended. He tries to get up to leave. They won't let him off. And then he falls and starts coughing up black, like, goop.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know if it's just black goop or if it's just so black. It might be blood that's so dark to the point where it's black.
Coagulated, it's just...
But he's not a good shape.
Yeah.
And, of course, what's his face?
Still Jack Haig. Del Rio going, cut to fucking commercial.
And Haig still thinks it's part of an act.
Yeah.
Haig is like, oh, it's one of those... We've all seen those behind-the-scenes footage things of people using those tubes to projectile vomit, like, in movies. He's thinking it's one of those things. And at this point, the people behind the scenes are getting a little...
Maybe we should just call it quits now. And then Jack's like, well, if you thought that was fake, wait till you see this. I read this manuscript of a book that came across my desk a couple months ago. Haven't stopped thinking about it since.
I think it's called Conversations with the Devil.
With the Devil, yeah. It's written by a doctor who has basically adopted and studied a girl who was from a satanic worshipping cult.
Yeah,
basically,
she was abducted as a little girl. And
I think they said she was one of the childs that was raised for sacrifice.
Yeah, she was.
When the FBI raided the place, everyone else killed themselves, and she was the only one surviving.
Also say, because they shoot little scenes about this, and that's why it's also cool that it's taking place in the 70s, because in the 70s, there was a huge rise in, like, satanic cults and paganism.
Yeah, 70s and 80s,
So, this would definitely be something that was, like, big at the time.
And the girl's name, her name is Lily, which is probably short for Lilith.
Oh, yeah.
First demon, the mother of monsters.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of that.
The minute I heard that, I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah.
And they basically want to see if they can, as the trailer teaser says, commune with the devil. So they bring her out, and they, at first they don't do a, they do. They bring her out.
The girl is at times possessed by a demon. But at first,
Mr. Wiggles.
Mr. Wiggles. And at first they just talk about everything, but they don't actually show anything.
Right.
Because the doctor's like, I don't think we should do it here. It's not a controlled environment. Things could go very wrong.
She says she cares about the welfare of the child, but at some point you're like, does she really, though? I mean, she is bringing her out here.
Right. To promote her book. Like,
the whole thing about this movie is that everybody is like trying to like promote their own self-interest.
Yeah, basically.
Sorry, I didn't mean to trample over. I could tell you were, that's exactly what you were about to say. I didn't mean to trample over what you were
You're
saying.
all good. Basically, everyone's promoting their own shit. Just gotta move up in the world. And you can tell that Jack and the Dr. June Ross Mitchell, played by Laura Gordon.
They got a little history, it looks like.
They got a little fling going on. Because, you know, Jack's talking to Lily Logo. He's like, have you ever watched the show? She's like, no. Usually in bed by now. But I know who you are. Doctor says you're a very handsome man. And then other, like, mischievous things. Like, she's like, I think after tonight you're going to be very famous.
Even if you didn't know you were watching a horror movie, the way this little girl's acting, you're like, all right, this chick is... Something's off about this chick.
All right, Chris, I'm going to ask you, since you have a special disdain for child actors.
What did I think of her?
What do you think of this child actor in this movie?
I think they were trying a little too hard to be like Reagan.
Okay.
I didn't hate her. She wasn't my favorite part about it.
You know.
But I'd say I'm take it or leave it, I guess.
Yeah.
If I was going to say enjoyed her performance versus didn't enjoy her performance, I'd say it's probably 60-40, more 60 towards meh.
Okay.
So I didn't hate it, but I was like, eh, it could have been better. But yeah. What do you think?
I thought she did a pretty good job.
She was okay. I didn't hate her. No. But it did feel like it was trying to be very Reagan-y.
Yeah. She didn't ruin the movie, though.
No, she didn't ruin the movie. No, not at all.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. There was... I always find it weird that when you have, like, little kids possessed, you have to make them, like, just be vulgar.
Right, yeah.
And that kind of ticked me out, too. Like, I've never seen a possession where the kid is talking. Well, Reagan kind of did it at one point when she wasn't saying, your mother sucks cocks in hell. Yeah. But she did have little instances where she was, I don't know. The vulgarity... I sound like such a puss for saying the vulgarity, but it's kind of hard to explain.
Yeah, it's kind of rough to watch a child be like that. Yeah,
no, it's cringe to me. Not even that's because it's a kid, just because I think it's a played out trope. The kids being cursing and stuff. Because I know that's supposed to be the thing that's disturbing is that it's this little kid saying this disturbing stuff. But I just think that trope is just overdone, in my opinion.
Okay,
that's just my opinion, but it's certainly not her fault.
No, and then they go to another commercial break, and you see all the behind the scenes stuff. And they start asking for strange and a knife so they could bring out this demon.
The plan is they want to have a full, like, commune with the devil, and then after that, Carr Haig, see if he can disprove it, pretty much.
Yeah. And basically, so they get the demon to come out. First, it's kind of confused, like, where am I? What are you doing to me?
Complete with the whole voice changing thing. Like, it's like her voice mixed with, like, a deep demonic voice.
Yeah. And it looks over, he says, good to see you again, Jack. Jack's like, I don't believe we met. Yeah, we have. At the Grove.
Oh, yeah, at the Grove, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, basically the devil's here and he's talking to everybody and to the point where, you know, saying, you know, your typical demon shtick and then makes the chair levitate.
Yeah.
It stops and everyone's looking at Haig like, there is no way that you can disprove this. Which, that's another thing that I like about this, is that because it's the 70s, an audience probably would, like, the showmanship with the audience would have been, like, they would have been freaked out seeing something like that. I think nowadays, people would be too, like, that's not real kind of thing. Yeah. But in the 70s, they were treating that as real.
They went back to Haig, he's like, that was impressive. Great performance, but not real. And Jack Delaware's like, you just kind of seem like a guy that doesn't want to part with money.
Yeah, because remember, $100,000 on the line here.
Yeah. And he's like, no, I know what she did. I know exactly what she did, and I can show you. She hypnotized everyone, and I'm going to show you how she did it.
Hey, Gus, get over here.
Yeah. Gus, thank you for volunteering today.
Which, at this point, by the way, Gus wants nothing to do with any of this.
Gus has been freaking out. He's done, but...
And I think, at this point, Christu has found out to be dead at this point. They found out during one of the breaks that Christu died on his way to the hospital. He, like, had a brain hemorrhage or something from what happened when he was on.
So he's, like, doing dim lights, and he's speaking smoothly to Gus, and then he hypnotizes him to think that he has worms coming out of his neck and out of his stomach. But as you're watching the movie, you see everything that Gus sees. Like, you're hypnotized as well. You see the worms, see him coming out of his stomach. The
audience is freaking out.
Yeah, because he hypnotized the audience as well.
So you gotta give it to the guy, he knows how to do it.
And then he sets his fingers, and Gus is there with his shirt open, but nothing wrong with them, and they're all really confused.
Even Jack is in the back, like what happened?
He's like, no, I saw the worms and everything coming out of them.
So they go back to replay the tapes.
They replay the tapes, and basically shows that he hypnotized the crowd and everybody to see what Gus said, saw.
I guess it was just power of suggestion.
Yeah. Because on the tape, when you watch it, you see nothing happening. You just see Gus freaking out. So you're like, well, if the tape's still alive, why don't we go back and watch the tapes from...
Earlier.
And the doctor's like, no, we absolutely can't do that. It's not good for her to see her like that.
Because they didn't want her to see her own possessed state.
Yeah. Kind of thing. And she's like, no, doctor, it's fine. We need to prove this guy wrong.
It doesn't take a lot of coaxing. That's why I say even the doctor is for her own self-interest.
Yeah. It doesn't take much to convince her.
But she does act like...
Between her self-interest and her thing for Jack.
And she even talks to, like, Jack. She'll say out loud how she'll be like, oh, the safety of the kids is my prime concern. We need to get her out of here. But all it takes is the kid going, no, let's stay. And she's like, oh, okay.
So they go back and watch the footage, and you see everything you saw the first time. And then Jack's like, hold on, slow down the tape. Slow down, frame by frame. You stop at one frame, and you see Jack's wife behind him.
It was just like for half a frame, you see...
Yeah, her spirit behind him with her hand on his shoulder.
And this is where the movie gets interesting.
And then you got Hagar, oh, well now I figured it out. You've altered all the tapes. This makes good sense.
You're in cahoots with the girl.
Yeah.
You're just trying to get ratings.
Yeah, shame on you for trying to use your wife for ratings, Jack. And then...
Night takes a turn.
Yeah. Mr. Riggles finds himself back out there.
And now he has a host.
Yeah. Has a host. And people start to die.
People start to die. There was static electricity that started filling the room. And then she... Was it Lily? Basically goes full scanners, goes full carry mode, and this is where just like if you were asleep during the movie, this is where you wake up.
Yeah,
because there's just pandemonium. Yeah. Gus gets it. He gets. Yeah, he tries to power of Christ compeller and just gets his neck snapped.
Yep, poor Gus.
The doctor lady basically gets strangled with her own necklace.
Yeah,
and the skeptic and basically gets what everybody wanted to see.
Try to hand her a check. For $500,000, and then the check evaporates, and then he just
melts.
Incinerated.
Which everybody was waiting to see him because everybody wanted to see, this guy's, right, and he's not a murderer. He's not a god awful person, but man, I want to see something bad happen to this guy.
Yeah.
And her head pretty much opens up. Her head turns into this big, staticky looking.
A lot of CGI.
Yeah, a lot of CGI. And Jack just slowly backs away.
Yeah.
And this is the sequence that made me not give it a 9.
Yeah. It, kind of view it as Jack kind of replaying his life as he's getting ready to die.
Like, kind of like his life pretty much was just the show.
Yeah. Basically, you see a lot of, like, the skit they showed us at the beginning of the movie at the end. Jack kind of there, but not there, like, What's going on? Yeah.
It's like he's reliving his past, but they only do it for like 2 or 3 scenes.
Yeah.
And it's like his studio audience is like now kind of like a haunting kind of presence. And then he sees does his wife come first or the owl first?
I think the owl gives him like
the dagger. It was the owl first. Yeah. He has a hallucination about like the orgy party and the owl.
Yeah.
And he's like, they're like, drink from this chalice. And he drinks from it.
Yeah, and then he sees his wife on her deathbed, and he stabs her.
And he stabs her. Well, she was in pain, and
and
she gives him a knife, and he stabs her.
Yeah.
And then he comes out of his hallucination, and it's that he stabbed the little girl, Lily.
Yeah.
And he's just him standing
in the middle of his studio with all those dead, all the dead people around, and he's just traumatized.
Yeah, what was he? Stop watching. Turn it off.
He's a dreamer. A dreamer here, awake, or something like that. Yeah. I think he's a dreamer here, awake, or something like that.
Yeah, and, but then he was yelling to like turn it off or something. Stop watching too.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, that was before he stabbed her in the shoulder, that in the chest. That was when he was going through his hallucination in the audience, and he was telling everybody to turn off their screens.
Oh, I thought that was the closing scene.
No, the closing scene was him just kind of standing there traumatized. But that was part of his hallucination.
Yeah.
And that's how it ends. And it was like, that's basically how, that was the last TV show it had ever aired.
Yeah. It was on live TV and then never played it again.
This movie has a lot of stuff going for it.
Yeah.
And it's, this movie is destined to be a cult classic.
I think it'll be bigger than a cult classic.
Really? Because it wasn't box office big, because it was only in the box office for like a week or two.
Yeah, but nowadays being box office big doesn't really mean much. Cause a lot of things are straight. Because this went to streaming, 2 weeks after being released on theaters?
Although I say it's going to be cult just because I don't think it'll go down in the annals of history and get the same kind of fame as something like a Halloween or... I don't think it's going to get that.
It's not going to be that big, no. But
I think that it deserves just as much praise.
Yeah,
that's how I think it'll be a cult. I don't think it'll reach that height of fame.
This could be a contender for one of the top movies of the year.
Oh, I was. Now I just got to talk about that ending.
Yeah,
because that is where it.
It's not a bad ending, but not the best ending they could have came up with.
I'm trying to think of how to put it, of why it didn't work really for me.
Yeah.
I guess the whole thing is that he feels bad because he basically used his wife's cancer as a way to try to get ratings.
Yeah.
But I mean...
But for me, the reason it didn't quite land well for me is the entire movie feels like you're watching a late night show.
Until the end.
And then you're drastically like pulled out of it. Like, I wouldn't have went that way.
That's probably the best way to put it. You put it in a way I couldn't have. You were in this 70s aesthetic, which was great, even during the big scene of the end.
Yeah.
And it's really, really cool. And then it turns into like a generic, the way it's shot. It's a completely different kind of movie.
Yeah.
It was the tone difference. It did not fit.
Yeah.
It was a tonal shift that didn't fit.
Yeah. Like I said, it's not a bad ending. It didn't ruin the movie or anything, but plus, I felt like they could have done better at the ending.
A lot of those hallucination scenes were in the trailer.
Yeah.
It made me think that he was going to be kind of hallucinating throughout the movie. Like he's kind of going crazy as the movie's going on, which I thought was going to be like the devil is making him go crazy as the show goes on. That's how I thought it was going to go. So those scenes that we saw in the trailer, I'm sitting here thinking, okay, the devil's going to make him go crazy. But at the end, it's just for a sequence that lasted about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It just didn't work for me. And that's honestly, if the movie ended with like all the destruction happening and then it just like cut and said like that was the end of it, then it would have probably got more of a 9.
Yeah, so the ending kind of cost a couple points, but overall, still a very good movie.
This is going to be in my yearly Halloween watch.
Yeah.
That's going to definitely be making the rounds when it's coming Halloween time. And was there a scene that stood out?
I think.
Or a scene that you particularly liked?
I think the hypnosis scene with the worms is probably a scene that is always going to stick out with me. Because as you're watching it for the first time, you're like... What is going on here? Like, how is this happening?
Like this, yes. Like, what? Like, is this where the movie gets into high gear? Like,
yeah.
Like,
and you're trying to kind of like figure it out. You're like, is Lily doing this and just fucking with Hank while he's trying to prove her wrong? Like, yeah.
But I think I said my favorite scene wasn't even a favorite scene, but something that I didn't think I would like was a small little bit that they added into the movie was. In between all of the stuff and the audience getting freaked out, you have Gus in between takes going and doing jokes for the audience.
Yeah, that,
trying to calm them down and try to, like, you have to get the crowd under control.
Yeah, keeping the crowd from leaving,
which I thought was a pretty cool touch that, like, because I think you see it twice. Once where he's, like, doing it, and the second time where he's, like, more serious but trying to put on a
thing. He's getting more personal with the audience, just, like, talking to him instead of joking with them. Yeah.
So, little things like that I just kind of liked. It's small, but I noticed it.
So I could only find 2 rotten reviews on this one.
And go ahead and say what the rotten reviews were.
All right, the first one from Jessica Scott on We Who Walk Here. Late Night with the Devil could have been an interesting examination of power. Instead, it's a sloppy, dull movie that refuses to commit to its own format, aesthetic, or themes.
No, it kept the same aesthetic pretty much throughout. It was just that last 10 minutes.
I'm going to disagree with you on that, Jessica.
It was fun. The cool thing is as a movie,
it wasn't dull either. Like,
it wasn't dull, and even if you, like, look at it and think of it, like, the first, you know, it was probably 25 minutes in. That's when we get, like, the. It wasn't even really any effects. It was just Christu's acting, just being a medium. You don't see anything except for a little nosebleed, but it's not boring.
And then we got Alistair Harkness from The Scotsman. This much-hyped indie horror squanders a promising premise with corny execution, a botched found footage framing device, and a general lack of tension.
I thought the found footage being like a unaired late night talk show host was brilliant.
That worked for me. I love that part.
That was a found footage thing I've never really seen before. Something that was a 70s late night talk show.
Yeah, and I could kind of see like tension, but at the same time, there were some tense parts. But
it was funny though. The money, most of the money definitely went into the big CGI 10 minutes at the end.
Yeah.
But that was the least interesting part of the movie.
Right.
All of the other restrained scenes and tense scenes were a lot more interesting than big CGI and props fest at the end.
Yeah.
But what was the audience score and what was the critic score?
Right. Late Night with the Devil, the Rotten Tomatoes, the tomato meter has it at 97%.
That's why I think that, like, the tomato meters are just kind of out of touch with reality. Just because 97, it's a good movie, but I certainly don't think it's 97% good.
Yeah, that's why I really, when it comes to Rotten Tomatoes, don't look at the tomato meter too often.
I just go by it for comparison's sake.
Yeah, the audience score, which is at 81%, which is still really good.
That's about. So what was our average score? Was it like
20-something? I think mine ended up being 25.25 out of 30, and yours was 24.9 out of 30. So basically 83%
is pretty much what we gave it.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what this is, 82, 83.
So a good movie, highly recommend you watch it. It only being April, but still could be a contender for one of the better movies this year.
Yeah, I'll definitely put it up, especially for just horror movies, I'll definitely put it up there as a contender.
Yeah.
I'm happy with it. And it really was, I don't know if I'm just disappointed that I can't bring myself to give it a 9.
Yeah. Well, that happens sometimes.
Yeah.
And we appreciate you all for listening. Have a good week, everybody.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Body Bag Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe and leave us a comment as to what you'd like to hear us review or any horror movie topics you'd like to hear us rant and rave about.
And while you're at it, you can find us on Twitter at BodyBagPod and on Instagram at BodyBagPodcast.
Thanks, and we'll see you next time.